HD3 East Lansing.
From WKAR at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports with Al Martin.
Johnny Peralta lines one to right field for a base hit.
Miguel Cabrera, game-winning walk-off home run.
The champagne is flowing in the Tigers clubhouse.
I would have never, ever thought that I would have been in the Michigan Hall of Fame as a kid when I first picked up a basketball on 512 Gray Street in Flint, Michigan.
Thomas drives to the left side, goes up and banks it in. Jasmine Thomas.
That's the joy you get from watching it, like a JV wrestler. Get his first match ever. That makes it worthwhile as a coach.
It's a fake. Bates is going to throw. He's going. Touchdown. Michigan State wins it in overtime.
Here we go, good people. It's May 30th. 2013, and welcome to Current Sports on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing with me, Al Martin. It's a beautiful day in the state of Michigan, and guess what? We have another great show for you all today. We'll visit the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame and discover why this place is one of a kind. I took a trip there with Executive Director Bob Every. We'll also talk with arguably the greatest women's golfer in the history of Michigan State, Caroline Powers. And yes, the Red Wings will be watching the rest of the playoffs from their living room couches. Boy, was that a tough one to watch last night. All of that and so much more. Keep it locked right here. Current Sports starts now. Welcome to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. As custom, before we kick off the show, a big thanks goes out to all of you out there who have been tuning into your radios, listening faithfully day in and day out to Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870. Be a part of the hands-on discussion each and every day. Follow me on Twitter at Al Martin WKAR. Like Current Sports on Facebook at facebook.com/currentsports, or even email me at almartin@wkar.org. Hit us up, ladies and gents. We want to hear what's on your mind. Again, we have a great show for you all. Later on in the hour, we will talk with Caroline Powers, a woman who has been making some very loud noise in the world of women's golf at MSU, and not just at MSU, but across the nation. She is certainly something special. But before we get into that, we've got a special treat for you all. Now, coming up in July, the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame will induct its 2013 honorees. Now, the Hall of Fame is located in downtown Lansing at the inside the Lansing Center on Michigan Avenue. I stopped by last week for a look at the exhibits highlighting the many outstanding amateur and professional athletes from the Greater Lansing area.
Now, here's Magic down the middle. Magic. Whoa! Here's a pass under to Worthy. Nobody looking at him, and he scores. Magic threw the ball right past the redhead's ear.
Magic coming out of the backcourt. Turns around McDaniel. He's down the middle around Ellis. He bounces the ball under to Worthy, and he's got two more. They need timeout, and they call.
Strike three call. Strikes out the side. 5Ks for Smoltz. Backcourt. Little strikeout number 7 for John Smoltz. Two down here in the fifth.
At wide receiver from Michigan State, number 87, Moosen. Muhammad
heaves it downfield for Muhammad in the end zone. He got it! Touchdown! What a great catch by Mohsin Muhammad! The Panthers have...
Yes, there are many legends that have come from the Greater Lansing area. Magic Johnson, John Smoltz, Mohsin Muhammad, just a few of the amazing athletes enshrined in the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame. Now, Bob Every is the executive director, and he's well known in mid-Michigan as a softball coach and also an accomplished boxer. Now, Bob gave me a tour of the Hall of Fame last week, and we started by looking at a pair of Bob's own golden shoes.
Well, you know, those boots were something that I saw the Marine team wear when I was fighting at the national tournament in San Diego, California, back in 1967, and I really liked the way they looked under the overhead lights, so I decided that I was going to get myself a pair, and I did. And when I went back out to San Diego, California in 69 to compete in the National AAU tournament, I actually wore them for one fight, And I just, you know, I guess I just figured out that they weren't me, you know what I mean?
A little too flashy, huh?
A little too flashy for an old farm boy like me, so.
Right.
But I thought, well, we'd just throw them in here and conversation piece, you know, people can talk about them, but.
That's where those came
from.
Well, that's the first thing that caught my eye when I looked at them. I'm like, those boots, I would rock those, man. Those are really stylish, man. They're gold boots. Yeah, explain what they look like.
Well, I don't know. Maybe they're might be a little high-step ballet slippers for all I know. I don't, you know. I mean, people always kind of said that I had a fairly good style of a boxer-puncher combined, and I had good footwork, and I guess I just thought maybe that made me look a little bit more flashier. And let's face it, boxing is a sport where psychologically you try to have every advantage you can.
Gotcha. Thanks. But, all right, well, let's continue the tour, man.
The Granger collection was supplied by one of the workers right here at the Lansing Center. And he was related to Charlie Granger in some way, some distant way. But he had these things, and he said, you know, I'd like to bring them down and put them on display. So he volunteered those things to us to have on display, and that's why they're here. But as you know, Charlie Granger was from Fowlerville, and that certainly qualifies to be inducted into the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame. And he might be the only Hall of Fame member in our Hall of Fame. We have many baseball players, but John Smoltz will be a Hall of Famer eventually, and we'll get around to his plaque in just a little bit. But Geringer certainly is one of the greatest Tigers ever played the game and wore the uniform, so we figured we had to have that in there. And take up a very big spot, you know.
Now, I got to ask you, Bob, but that's one of the things I wanted to ask you as far as this Hall of Fame, the Lansing Sports Hall of Fame. I mean, what areas qualify you to be in this Hall of Fame?
Yeah, we struggled with that in the beginning, and we came up with the Greater Lansing area being determined by the Lansing State Journal circulation area. Mm-hmm. So wherever the Lansing State Journal gets out to, and we figured it was about as far, we thought it'd be about a 40, 45-mile radius.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
So okay. Let's move on down here. You know, this jacket right there was worn by Dave Porter, who was one of the most iconic wrestlers in collegiate wrestling history. He won two national championships as a heavyweight, had a great amateur career. This is the great Dean Look, the official in the NFL. Magic, we had a retro jersey of Magic up here, and when he got back for the Hall of Fame, he said, no, you got to have an original. So he signed us a jersey and sent it back to us. And then, you know, last year we also brought in Mohsin Muhammad, who's one of the greatest receivers.
Of course, right.
I think Mohsin had sent that to me last year prior to his induction. Mm-hmm. And when Magic saw that, he said, well, I got to get one up there, too. But Mohsin is a great guy and he was a great athlete. I think he still holds a record for the longest reception in one play in a Super Bowl game.
Yeah, in a Super Bowl game.
84 yards or something.
And where's Mohsin from?
Well, he's from Lansing here. He's from Lansing. He went to Waverly High School. Mm-hmm. He actually came down to the Crown Boxing Club when he was a young guy in high school, thinking that he might want to box instead of do all the other stuff. But I told him he made the right decision.
Yeah, definitely. Did he get in the ring at all?
Yeah, he did. You know, and of course, he was a pretty good-sized kid back then, but pretty tough kid. But he tried it for a short while, and then he moved on to something else. Now, if you go over in this corner, this is basically what was our team corner. Yeah. Fabian Williams. Fabian Hurricane Williams was the very first national Golden Gloves winner, boxer, out of Lansing, out of the Lansing area.
Wow, he was the first one.
He was the very first national. We've had three national champions, and all three of them have come out of the Crown Boxing Club. Fabian was the very first one.
And that's his belt. Is that the belt
That's the belt when he won the North American Boxing Federation Professional Championship.
Wow, unbelievable,
so,
man.
The robe was, that's professional stuff there, but... But, yeah, we thought that would be nice. And he's coming in this year. Fabian's coming in this year.
Nice.
Now, this is really interesting. I don't know if you know the history about Victor Sayers. Sayers was – I have some information about Vic Sayers you wouldn't believe. And you remember the great Christy Mathewson?
Yeah.
Christy Mathewson was playing in a game, and I have an article that Christy Mathewson wrote for a publication, and they were talking about this guy hitting this home run off. And he said – the longest home run ever hit off me was hit off a guy by the name of Victor Sayers, and Victor's right here from Lansing. He said he hit that ball so far, I mean, it was just unbelievable. And to have a great pitching legend like Christy Mathewson say that this guy hit the longest home run off him that he ever saw was unbelievable. But that's the retro jersey that he wore back in 1907 when he played for the Cubs, and was on an All-Star team. and was being billed as the greatest first baseman in the era of baseball back then. And he had a couple of injuries. He initially injured himself sliding into home plate, and he was out for several weeks. And then he came back in and he injured himself again. And he never got to the point where Grantland Rice, I believe it was, wrote an article that he was going to be the next superstar of baseball. And so he played in an all-star game, but never reached the peak that
the expectations.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Now, I got to ask you this, Bob. When I look at all this and all these jerseys hanging up here, how did you get in touch with a lot of these athletes to come here and donate all this stuff? This is unbelievable.
Well, persistence, you know. I mean, if you want somebody on your show, you're not going to take no for an answer.
Not taking no for an answer.
And if I want something hung up here, I'm not taking no for an answer. And, you know, it took a lot of road work, a lot of phone calls, a lot of prodding. But, you know, some of the people that we've got things from have since walked through here and saw it and are so happy that they did it, because really it's just, you know, this really kind of immortalizes you, or it certainly immortalizes what we're trying to do here. And, you know, I think for anybody to come down, I mean, for Magic to come down and see the jersey that was up there, which was obviously a retro jersey, and then have him say, no, you got to put up an original one, and have him send us one.
Right.
Obviously, it means something.
Without
to these
a
guys.
Doubt. Yeah. It's special. Yep. It's special, yep. Man.
And then just continuing on over here, we just have. Right. That's the great Sammy Williams, who played football at Michigan State. A member of the original fearsome foursome that phrase really started in Detroit.
Right.
And
wow.
He, along with Darius McCord, Alex Karras, and Roger Brown, that was the original fearsome foursome. Mm-hmm. We picked this jersey. When did we get this, Jeff? About back in December or something? Mm-hmm. And now Sammy died. He just died recently.
Did he?
Yeah. So we feel real fortunate to have him. Mark Ditsworth, one of the greatest umpires that come out of here, had a good college career himself. Luke Hamlin played for the Brooklyn Dodgers back in 37. And he finished fourth in the MVP voting that year. And he was one notch above Mel Ott. And Mel Ott was, as you know, was a great baseball player, Hall of Famer. So, I mean, that's Luke Hamlin's claim to fame, is that he beat Mel Ott in Hall of Fame voting. I mean, MVP voting. Brock Gutierrez is coming in this year, and Brock had a long and illustrious career with Cincinnati, the 49ers, and the Detroit Lions. And he's from Charlotte. Code over here, great Pop Vaness, Al Pop Vaness, who started the Golden Gloves in Lansing. And
now, when you look at this, Bob, because a lot of people, especially where I'm from, Detroit, I mean, when you hear about Lansing, a lot of people don't know that all of these greats have come from here. I mean, you just hear about Magic Johnson, but a lot of people forget that a lot of people in this area. I mean, so how humbling is it when you see all of these names? And you're actually on I'm assuming, on one of these walls, too, because you were inducted in 94.
I'm right up there.
Right up there. Bob Emery, exactly. You know? So, I mean,
next to John Smoltz.
Right, right.
And there's a big fight between John Smoltz and Brad Van Pelt to see who could be next to me.
Oh, yeah. Nice. And you're right there next to John Smoltz. So when you look at the culture that Lansing has over the years, and you look at all these great names, I mean, what's that say about Lansing sports?
Well, I've said this many times to many people. I don't know of any area our size that has produced as many well-known athletes as we have. I mean, there might be some just as much, but I'm telling you right now, there's none anymore. When you take a look at the professionals, the Olympians, and then the great high school players that have come out of this area, it is unbelievable. I mean, look at here. You know, Bruce Miller, he played in two Pan American Games. I had a fortune enough to fight in the Olympic trials and then fight on U.S. amateur boxing team. Smoltz, Brad Van Pelt, you know, a great football player. He's in the College Football Hall of Fame.
Right.
Julie Alvenhouse over here was in the Olympics. That blazer up there belongs to Kevin Jackson. He was in the Olympics. That's the same blazer he wore when he won his gold medal. You can see the picture right there.
Wow.
And then this shirt right here, Carol Hutchins, you know, the great coach at Michigan, who graduated from Michigan State, played on the AIAW National Championship softball team, the only one that Michigan State ever had. And as a matter of fact, a funny story, we were in here one day. We come in here periodically just to make sure things are going okay and there's no damage and stuff. But I was walking around the corner, and there's this guy, and he was looking at this John Smoltz plaque. And I says,
excuse me, you John Smoltz fan? He said, you know, I'm up here on a convention from Atlanta. And he said, I never knew. And I'm a huge Atlanta Braves baseball fan. I never knew that John Smoltz was from Lansing until I just read it on
until
this
he
plaque.
Saw that.
Yep.
So this serves as an eye-opener to a lot. It's an eye-opener to me right now because, I mean, looking at this, I mean, all these names that have come from this area is simply mind-boggling.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and then all these things in here, I mean, they all represent something. I mean, the Mulls, M-U-L-L, are synonymous with some of the greatest swimmers that ever come out of here. You know, and these are medals won by them in various competitions. And, and the hockey tradition. We're bringing in the Lansing Laurel softball team this year. You know, they were one of the greatest women's softball, amateur softball programs in the country at the time. And, you know, this poor gal here in the middle, Kay Purvis, she was recognized by the state of Michigan as the first lady of softball years ago. Mm-hmm. And she's in the Hall of Fame. Now, she has, God bless you, she has Alzheimer's, and she's not doing very well. And I don't know that she's going to be able to make this Hall of Fame ceremony, but certainly all the other players, like Carol Hutchins, who was on this team, and Kathy Strahan, who coaches out of California, was on this team, and so many great players. There's three players on that team that are in the softball, the National Fast Pitch Coaches Association Softball Hall of Fame. That is the pinnacle Hall of Fame for anybody that's in softball.
Unbelievable, man. Now, I got to ask you, you look up there and you see your name and your memorabilia up there in that case.
Yeah.
What goes through your mind? And you look at the names around here. What goes through your mind when you look at that?
Well, first of all, I'm proud. I'm proud to be associated or even be close to John Smoltz.
Yeah, you're right next to John Smoltz.
Yeah, they call this every quarter, by the way. I had a little bit to do with some of the stuff. There's no doubt about it being the executive director. But you know what? I paid my dues, and I worked hard, and I certainly was able to represent my country and my state and so many boxing venues. I take a look at all this stuff, and I say, my goodness, you know, what a great fraternity to be affiliated with. Right. I mean, this Hall of Fame is unbelievable, in my opinion. And, you know, every town, probably our size, has something that recognizes athletes. But, you know, this town is really athletic-driven, and it starts Michigan State. Michigan State starts it, let's face it.
Yeah.
You know,
but honest.
So much of what we do in this town is athletic driven that it just made sense for us to develop a Hall of Fame to recognize all these past athletes and then pass the heritage on to other kids who hopefully pass it on to other kids when they get to be older, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just like if you live in the village of anything's possible, then anything is possible. So if you bring kids down here and you let them see this stuff, and you let them read some of the stuff, and you let them see stuff. You know, I mean, where was Kevin Jackson when he won that gold medal? Where do you think that thing has been? You know, where do you think John Smoltz's jersey's been?
Right.
I mean, when you look at it in terms like that, you know, then you know that I can do it too.
If they inspiration.
Can do it, I can do it. Yes, inspiration is so much a part of success. It really is. And you have to be, you know, you have to have hopes and dreams. I mean, how are you ever going to have a dream come true if you don't have a dream?
Right.
You know, so, I mean, I think people should encourage people to daydream all they want, you know, and to dream about the impossible or dream about this or dream about that. And then align yourself out with people that will help you set that plan of action into place so you can achieve those dreams.
Exactly. Bob Every is the executive director at the Lansing Sports Hall of Fame. For Current Sports, this is Al Martin.
Yes, that was certainly one incredible trip. Bob took me around the entire Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame. It really amazed me. Really, my jaw was on the floor to see so many names that I had no idea came from the Greater Lansing area. Really cool stuff, guys. If you haven't been, it's truly a must-see. Right inside the Lansing Center at downtown Lansing. Really cool stuff. Right when you go into the main doors to your left, you can see so many jerseys, so much memorabilia, just so many ingrained memories throughout the years of individuals who have made their mark professionally and beyond that have come from the Greater Lansing area. Truly special. Tomorrow we will have part two of my one-on-one with Bob. You do not want to miss that one either. And I think, you know, looking at that last little bit of what he said when Bob talked about, you know, he wanted to really make this Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame something special to provide inspiration to kids who come through and look up and say, wow, that individual came from this area and went on to do amazing things in sports and in life in general. And it really took me back to when I was younger and had my idols, my childhood idols that I looked up to and who came from Detroit and inspired me to want to go to the NBA. Now, of course, that didn't happen. Of course, I'm sitting here with you guys, which is great. But, you know, providing inspiration and having dreams is so important to life because it really drives to inspire you to be a better individual and to be a better person and to strive for something greater than yourself. And that is the main message. One of the main messages I got from that time with Bob Every, incredible individual, again, truly a must-see at the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame inside the Lansing Center, downtown Lansing. If you haven't seen it, you got to see it tomorrow, part two of my one-on-one with Bob. Don't want to miss it. All right, when we return to current sports, we will dive into our current sports section of the show. We'll talk about the Wings, Tigers, local high school sports. We will just talk about it all. Stick around, and don't forget that we'll be talking with Caroline Powers, one of MSU's most prized women's golfers this season and beyond. You don't want to miss that. Stick around. More current sports is next.
The latest edition of the book your doctor uses to diagnose and treat mental illness has met with bad reviews. Many psychiatrists are saying the book's approach is out of date. I'm Ira Flatto. Join me on Science Friday for a look at what's next in diagnosing and treating mental illness. That's on Science Friday from NPR.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up at 2 p.m.
7 days a week, Current State brings you the issues, personalities, and events making the heart of Mid-Michigan beat.
To be able to start a farmer's market takes time and energy, people power, and planning.
We change the notes, or we change the phrasing, or we change something for what might happen that you can't really predict, and that's the beauty of jazz.
We are reinventing city government as we go along. It's like redesigning the airplane while in flight.
Current State, weekdays at 9 a.m. and 6 p.m. on 90.5 WKAR.
Game seven, like it's sometimes like it's something to avoid. Like, it's as much fun as you can have in hockey. That's what it is. It's about having fun. When you do what you're supposed to do and you're organized and you trust your teammates and you trust your structure, let's play.
Hey, good people. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. It's now time for Current Sports, giving you all of the sporting news, latest sporting news concerning the good people of Mid-Michigan. And you just heard Mike Babcock, the head coach of the Red Wings, after that really just heartbreaking loss to the Chicago Blackhawks in Game 7 of the Western Conference semis last night. Like I said, a heartbreaker for the Wings. Brent Seabrook sent a wrist shot past Jimmy Howard with only 3 minutes and 35 seconds into overtime to beat the Wings 2-1. Check out the call.
That one gloved down by Erickson. Builder to hit now, and Nyquist, oh my, he's run into by Boland. Right back ahead comes Seabrook with a shot. He scores!
Yeah, a heartbreaker, ladies and gentlemen. The Wings, again, they fall to the Chicago Blackhawks 2-1. And that last goal from Brent Seabrook, if you look at it, it just went by, just went by Jimmy Howard. I mean, just like an inch to the left and he would have caught the thing or deflected it. But the Wings fall. Really a season for me, when I look at this season for the Wings, such a young team, a team of in transition. And to get as far as they did and to push the Blackhawks, arguably, I mean, a team who has the best record in the NHL, to Game 7. They actually had, and they had a 3-1 lead. 3-1 lead. At one point, I was getting a little, because I had called the Wings to initially get swept left, looking at that Game 1, at 4-1, and then the Wings just come storming back. Really impressed me and had me convinced. I actually sent out a tweet that said the Wings would win 3-2. But I eventually ended up getting called the Blackhawks to win the series. But, man, I did not think it was going to go to a Game 7. So when you look at that, really a season that you can look at, especially in the postseason, that the Wings can really build off of. I mean, you had some great young talent. I mean, Jimmy Howard, it was truly something special to see. Him to see his performance throughout this postseason was, he was unbelievable. Unbelievable. So one of the most interesting, controversial parts of that game, though, came in the third period when the Blackhawks thought they had a goal scored to put them up 2-1. And a lot of Blackhawk fans out there, to be honest with you, a lot of Detroit Red Wings fans out there thought the game was over at that point. I mean, looking at that, it was a goal scored in the third period, as I said, put the Blackhawks up 2-1, and it was waved off less than 2 minutes remaining by ref official Stephen Walkham. Now, it appeared that defenseman Nicholas Jalmerson had given the Chicago Blackhawks the lead in a tightly contested Game 7. But behind the play, Detroit defenseman Kyle Quincy had put Chicago's rookie forward Brandon Saad into the Red Wings bench and then shoved him into the ice. Sad, he threw a glove swipe at Quincy's face. And really, that's the point. I mean, as I said, Stephen Walkham came in and blew the whistle, blew the play dead, and the goal happened literally right after that, guys. And I tell you what, Chicago fans weren't too happy with it, and Joe Quenneville, the head coach of Chicago Blackhawks, he wasn't happy either.
Well, you know, I was standing on the bench. I saw what was going on, and it was one of those calls that can happen.
What kind of explanation did you get for that call?
I didn't get any explanation.
Did you ask for one?
No. I saw the play, and then we looked at it after the period again, a little tighter, but I didn't ask for one.
Yeah, really a controversial call. Again, Kyle Quincy, you know, he put Chicago's rookie forward, Brandon Saad, into the Red Wings bench, and it kind of ignited a little sprawl. Nothing major, though. I mean, it was a little ticky-tacky, yummy-yummy type call. I mean, I couldn't believe they called. I thought this was hockey, guys. I couldn't believe they blew the whistle on that. But it gave the Wings a second life. It definitely did, because that's, without that call, I mean, that's the goal that kind of changed the momentum a little bit. Things end up going to overtime, and you guys know the rest. So, but looking at this game, it was a pretty even game. Seemed to go back and forth. Really was impressed with the Red Wings' energy coming out the gates. I mean, it's a Game 7. You guys do or die. So, really wasn't surprised, I guess you could say, to see them come out like that. Both teams very aggressive. And the Blackhawks did a great job of extending the floor. I tell you, there were many long passes throughout that game. Back and forth from the Blackhawks. They did a great job at that. And they actually had a really nice 3-on-1 goal by Marian Hossa, Michael Hanzus, and Patrick Sharp, who finished it. Really nice. Great teamwork from those guys. But so Chicago now makes it to the conference finals for the first time since it won the title 3 years ago. It will play the Los Angeles Kings Game 1 on Saturday night. Now, the future for the Wings, it does look bright, though. Relatively young team. Show great resilience, as I said, and sparks of a pretty nice potential throughout the playoffs. So, I mean, guys like Jimmy Howard, again, I keep going back to Howard because he was so impressive. I think the kid is underrated. I think the NHL and Hockey Town in general needs to be talking more about him because he was simply spectacular. But, you know, they had a 3-1 lead, and it makes you just wonder what if, you know. But guys like Justin Abdicator, who was great, Henrik Zetterberg, who's turned out to be a great leader for this team. So, Red Wings fans, don't hang your head. Heck, many people didn't even think you would get this far. So, a lot of potential. A lot of potential. So, all right, the Detroit Tigers. They fall to the Pittsburgh Pirates last night, 5-3. Anibal Sanchez had a solid 6 innings. I mean, he had everything going. Really was nice in those first 6 innings. But in the 7th, things drastically changed for the brother. I mean, Pedro Alvarez, he sparked a 4-run 7th inning. Started with a 2-run double to really shift the momentum of that game. And the victory was Pittsburgh's eighth of the year when it trailed after 6 innings and pushed the Pirates to a season-high 13 games above .500. Really a tough one for the Tigers. Like I said, Anibal, he was great. He was great the first 6 innings. I mean, he was dealing, man. But in the end, that seventh inning was just a total collapse. Now, Miguel Cabrera, of course, the great Miguel Cabrera, he just, another day at the office, he hits his 15th home run. He flied it out to the wall in right field with a homer to end it. He hit it out to right field. Unbelievable. This is his 15th homer of the season, though. Now, Anibal Sanchez, he retired 16 of 17 batters at one point. Appeared to have all the cushion he needed. After that, Andy Dirks, he doubled home. Don Kelly with one out in the fifth. Cabrera with that home run, but couldn't seal the deal. Again, that seventh inning proved to be crucial. So, also want to note, though, Detroit outfielder Torrey Hunter sustained a contusion on his left elbow after getting hit by Morris's fastball in the seventh. Hunter said the pain made him feel dizzy, but x-rays were negative. And Tigers center fielder Austin Jackson, now he is likely heading to AAA Toledo for the minor leagues this weekend while he recovers off an injured left hamstring that's had him on the disabled list since May 12th. So got to take note of Torrey Hunter and Austin Jackson. But again, the Tigers fall to the Pittsburgh Pirates 5-3 last night. We'll see how they rebound. The series concludes on Thursday, which is tonight. Now, I also want to note that the Cleveland Indians, yes, the Indians, they break a 5-game losing streak last night to the Cincinnati Reds, winning 5-2. They are now only 1.5 game in back of the AL Central Division leading Tigers. So Cleveland trying to bring some life back and trying to gun for that top spot. Also want to note some very sad news, of course, as we talked about this yesterday. Cullen Finnerty, the former quarterback of Grand Valley State University, truly a legend, one of the greatest college quarterbacks of all time. He was found dead Tuesday night after going missing during a fishing trip. Now, an autopsy was performed yesterday, and the cause of death was still not determined during that autopsy. So they are saying that there are no obvious signs of heart trauma after doing the autopsy. Now, they still, however, have other tests to perform on things such as the brain. Prayers out to the Cullen Finnerty family. We can only imagine what they're going through. Just reporting that it's really up in the air to how Cullen Finnerty passed away. So just updating you guys on that. And local track meets, baby. That's right. Yesterday, Mason sophomore. This is during the Greater Lansing Honor Roll meet. Mason sophomore Meg Darmafal. That's right. In the 1600 meter run yesterday, she broke the Greater Lansing Honor Roll meet record with a time of, this is in the 1600, this is a time of 4:55.15. The record was previously held by Holt's Kelly Robinson in 2003. She was great, man. And also, Okemos sophomore Ashlyn Shiro, she won the 100 hurdles and set a meet record with a time of 43.97 in the 300 hurdles. So just updating you just on a few action yesterday for the girls. And also the boys, Quincy Briggs of Lansing Eastern wins the 110 hurdles. Grand Ledge wins the 4x200 relay. And some golf action. Also, the East Lansing boys golf team yesterday won convincingly. Check out this, 17 strokes. Yes, the other teams to qualify for the regional tournament were DeWitt, St. John's, Hazlitt, Lakewood, and Fowlerville. But wow, East Lansing just not even making it close. 17 strokes, district title. Congrats to them. And head coach, great job by Victor Whipp, the East Lansing golf coach over there. Wow. All right, Floyd Mayweather. Yes, it is in the books. Ladies and gentlemen, the fight will happen. Floyd Mayweather to fight Saul Alvarez. It is confirmed September 14th, Wednesday. It was confirmed last night. The main event of a Showtime pay-per-view event at MGM Grand in Las Vegas. The biggest fight boxing has to offer right now. Saul Alvarez, truly a star right now in the game of boxing. When I found out about this fight, Saul Alvarez is nothing to play with, and I really think this will be Mayweather's biggest challenge, one of the biggest challenges of his career. Saul Alvarez, a guy making a lot of noise in the boxing world. Now, Mayweather holds the world title welterweight at 147 pounds, but he also still owns a junior middleweight title at 154, which he won by, of course, that win over Miguel Cotto in May of 2012. And after that fight, Mayweather returned to welterweight and defended the title against Roberto Guerrero in a lopsided unanimous decision on May 4th, also at MGM Grand. So he's moving back up in weight to face Alvarez, who's 42-0-1 with, get this, 30 KOs. Yeah, this guy is nothing to play with. Their belts are on the line. The fight will be contested at a catch weight of 152 pounds. So Alvarez, 22, young and spry. Man, he's my age. Man, that kid is something else. Now, Mayweather, of course, is older. This is going to be a good one. I may pay for this. I said on a few weeks ago that I may not pay for another Floyd Mayweather fight unless it's him and Pacquiao. But this one seems a bit intriguing to me. Mayweather and Alvarez, September 14th. Make sure you're at your TVs for this one. I really think this one will be a good one. Alvarez has been quoted in saying, quote, "I will be the first to beat Floyd." Man, I can't wait to see that one. That should be fun. So, all right. SEC vote. The head coaches voted 13-1 to stay at 8 conference games. This is college football in the SEC. To stay at 8 conference games during the season. The only coach, and come on now, this is kind of funny. The only coach voting for 9 conference games was Alabama's Nick Saban. I mean, he wants to just compete. That's Nick Saban's competitive drive. But there are some coaches who still think that the conference will eventually move to a 9-game conference season. Only time will tell. And Joe Paterno's family is suing the NCAA. Not sure if many of you guys have heard of this, but last night on Bob Costas, this is right after the Wings game, actually. I wanted to stay up for this, didn't get a chance to catch it, but Bob Costas on the NBC Sports Networks, Costas Tonight, reported that the family of the late Penn State coach Joe Paterno plans to file a lawsuit against the NCAA with hopes of overturning sanctions against the Nittany Lions related to the Jerry Sandusky child sex abuse case. Now, the Joe Paterno's family lawyer, Wick Solers, he was on the show that aired Wednesday evening, and Solers said that NCAA President Mark Emmert and Oregon State President Edward Ray, who was the chair of the NCAA's executive committee, also targeted in the plan. They're targeting him in the plan of litigation. So, they're really trying to just make sure that Joe Paterno's legacy is restored at Penn State. And they feel as though during that investigation, there were a lot of wrongdoing going on. And, we'll see how this turns out. So Joe Paterno's family is suing the NCAA. We'll see how that turns out. All right. Yes, we just keep beating a dead horse, I feel like. But Jack Nicklaus now weighs in on the Tiger Woods-Sergio Garcia dispute. Now, Tiger Woods spoke publicly Wednesday for the first time since Sergio Garcia made racially insensitive comments in reference to him last week in England. But Tiger didn't say much. Now, if you remember that Sergio Garcia, he was asked about whether he hashed it out with Tiger Woods and said, oh, yeah, we'll have him around. We'll serve him fried chicken. Fried chicken is a kind of a racial reference towards African-Americans. It sparked up a big just blew up, you know. So during a news conference at the Memorial Tournament, which is going on right now, Woods is the defending champion of that tournament, Woods said he expected that the controversy would end whether he speaks to Garcia or not. He says, quote, "That's already done with." When he was asked, would he talk to Garcia when they are both together again at the U.S. Open? Now, tournament host Jack Nicklaus, one of the greatest golfers of all time, he says, quote, "The Sergio Tiger thing, I mean, it's stupid," end quote, which I do definitely agree with your brother. Nicklaus said when he was asked generally about golfers and their differences, he says, quote, "I mean, do you guys have an issue with one another? They usually resolve it in themselves. You guys want to resolve it in the newspapers today? Nobody needs that. I think they both finally said, it's enough. Let's move on," end quote. Woods says he has not spoken to Garcia, who offered a statement of apology, did so again at a news conference a week ago at the BMW PGA Championship, and called Woods' agent, Mark Steinberg. Man, I'm really getting tired of hearing this story now. So, hey, let's move on. other things to note, ladies and gentlemen, that the Lugnuts, the Lansing Lugnuts, dropped their 5th straight game. Oh, man, the Lugnuts really, I mean, they were rolling at one point, but now They have dropped their fifth straight game last night. Fort Wayne, they lost 7-1 out at Parkview Field. So also NBA, the Pistons interview Bulls is Adrian Griffin. So the Pistons trying to find, still trying to search for a coach. Adrian Griffin, who's 38, he had a 9-year NBA career with various teams. Now, the buzz around the NBA is that the two front runners for the Pistons jobs are NBA coach, well, former NBA coach, I should say, Nate McMillan and Oklahoma City assistant Mo Cheeks. So, Pistons also, another name out there, who I think will be a pretty good fit, Brian Shaw. He's the Indiana Pacers assistant, who is also with the Lakers. I mean, Brian Shaw is a great basketball mind. I'm sure if he doesn't get this Pistons job, he'll definitely find his way as a head coach somewhere in the NBA. And also, former Hawks coach Larry Drew, his name has been thrown out there. So, of course, Phil Jackson is kind of, you know, around kind of mentoring this whole Pistons coaching search, which is kind of cool. I mean, you got one of the greatest coaches of all time as a mentor, so had to take note of that. So, and also, this really just came through, man. This is really a kind of a funny story. I don't know if you guys have heard of this yet, but a member of a women's golf team. This is kind of ironic because we're about to have Caroline Powers, arguably the greatest women's golfer of Michigan State's history. But anyway, a member of a women's golf team at a West Coast conference school has been sanctioned by the NCAA. Forget this. Washing her car on campus. What? This is crazy to me. So apparently you can't wash your car on campus if you are a member of the NCAA, if you're a player, you know, at that school. I think it's saying it's an NCAA rule. Yeah, this is an NCAA rule. You cannot wash your car on. I never heard of this. You can't wash your car on campus. This is according to Portland University basketball coach Eric Rivino. Now, Rivino tweeted about the violation Wednesday after he learned of it during press conference meetings. And he culminated the tweet with hashtag stop insanity. So this is the tweet he put out. Quote, just heard about two NCAA violations in the WCC. He says, one, an athlete using university water to... Okay, that's where it comes. Okay, you can't use university water to wash your car. You can't use university water to wash your car. So any athletes out there on campus that has a car, you cannot use Michigan State University's water to wash your car. That's hilarious to me. Hilarious. So she's being sanctioned right now by the NCAA. This is out at Portland University, I believe, NCAA women's golfer. She's being sanctioned for washing her car on campus. You can't do that. You can't do that. Wow. I don't know what to say about that one. All right, ladies and gents. Well, we have to move on to our last segment of current sports. When we return, we will talk with one of the most revered women's golfers in the history of Michigan State University, arguably the greatest women's golfer of all time. Yes, I said it. Yes, Caroline Powers will be joining us. You do not want to miss this. More current sports is coming right up.
Jury selection in the federal racketeering trial of the legendary Boston criminal Whitey Bulger begins next week. Bulger was wanted for 19 murders when he was captured in 2011 after 16 years on the lam. Bulger was also an informant and got protection from the FBI. On the next Fresh Air, two journalists who've covered his story join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 o'clock.
You count on All Things Considered for many reasons. The biggest stories of the day, from around the world to your own backyard. The thoughtful commentaries, the insightful features, or all of the above. All Things Considered has been your trusted source for news every afternoon. I'm Brad Walker, your host for All Things Considered, and glad to be a part of this show. I'll see you at 4 this afternoon.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm Al Martin. Well, we have a very special guest with us on today's edition of Current Sports, Caroline Powers, who is arguably the greatest woman's golfer in the history of Michigan State University. Man, it sends chills up my spine saying that. She has the lowest career average of any woman's golfer at MSU. She is this year's Big Ten Golfer of the Year, has just qualified for the most prestigious women's golf tournament in the game today, the U.S. Open. She's an All-American, a recipient of the Dinah Shore Trophy, which is a national trophy for the golfer who excels academically and on the course, of course. And she'll be turning pro at the end of June. Caroline Powers, welcome to Current Sports.
Thank you for having me.
Quite an introduction. No problem. You're welcome here anytime. First of all, when you hear about all of those accolades and knowing that you are arguably the greatest women's golfer in MSU history, I mean, what goes through your mind?
It's just really surreal to think that that has actually come true these past 4 years. Becoming a Spartan was always a dream of mine. And so when I got to come here, you know, I just wanted to be part of a team that was, you know, fighting for championships, and I just wanted to help out. And it all kind of unraveled from there. And with my coaches and the team, they just really set me up for success. So it was really a team effort for each one of those.
You are something else, Carolyn. Now, how long have you been playing the game of golf, and when did you realize? When was that moment when you said, hey, I'm pretty good at this game?
Well, I've been playing golf for as long as I can remember. My parents said when I was 3, but it was really just a family thing, and we were all just playing it from a really young age and took to it. I started playing in tournaments when I was 9, and so at that point in time, there was only, you know, me and my sister in every tournament. But once I got to junior high and high school, and I qualified for a couple national junior events, I think that's when it kind of set in that, you know, you're pretty good at this. And if you keep working hard, you know, you can get to Michigan State and you can make things happen.
Wow, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with Caroline Powers. She's truly special, arguably the greatest women's golfer in the history of Michigan State. I mean, this year's Big Ten Golfer of the Year, just qualified for the U.S. Open, a recipient of the Dinah Shore Trophy. We'll get to that in a sec. She'll be turning pro at the end of June. So, Caroline, you are turning pro at the end of June. How long has turning pro been on your mind, and has it hit you yet that you are about to be a pro golfer?
It hasn't really hit me. It's just starting to hit me that I'm done with school. But
one thing at a time, huh?
Yeah. But ever since I was little and started playing in tournaments when I was 9, I would write on every year in elementary school when they ask you, what are you going to be when you grow up? I said, I'm going to be on the LPGA. And, you know, people kind of encourage you when you're really young, and, you know, they kind of think, oh, that's cute, and yeah, you can do it, but it's crazy to think it's actually happening.
Now, Caroline, golf is an individual sport. It's just you, the ball, and the course out there. You really have to be locked in at what you're doing, and if you screw up, it's really just on you. I mean, and you really have to have kind of a competitive drive to go out there and compete. How competitive are you, Caroline?
I would say I'm pretty competitive. It's just even the little things of, you know, playing board games in my apartment with my roommate or things like that. You know, it's never fun to lose, but I think that that definitely helps out on the golf course where, you know, you gotta just hit it and go find it and, you know, take your medicine when you have to. But definitely the losing, you know, leaves a sour taste in your mouth, so it just drives you all the more for the next tournament.
Definitely. And, you know, we're talking with Caroline Powers. She has the lowest career average of any woman's golfer at MSU. This year's Big Ten Golfer of the Year will be turning pro at the end of June. So, Caroline, I got to ask you, who are some of the biggest influences in your life away from the golf course?
Away from the golf course, I'd have to say, I mean, my parents and my sister and brother, they've just been such a great support system for all growing up and through now and taking the next step. So they've just really encouraged me for, you know, every area of my life, not just golf, to, you know, try and make my dreams come true. And then my coach, Stacy Blavadnik, not just because of golf, but just because she always encouraged me and supported me when I wanted to do other activities in the community outreach and just different things. You know, it wasn't always just focused on me as a golfer. So definitely a lot of people have put in a lot of hours to me, but it definitely made all the difference.
Yeah, and that's truly evident. Now, you touched on Stacey Slobodnik-Stoll, the coach of the women's golf team over at Michigan State. Now, she has certainly built this program into something special over the years. What makes her such a special coach? And talk about her influence on your game.
She is just really one of a kind. You know, she wants to give us every opportunity to succeed in golf and in anything that we think that we want to do with our lives. So she just, you know, she knows what she wants and she knows what we want, and she's not going to stop at anything for us to not achieve our goals. So she really sets us up just day in and day out to reach our goals and to just keep working hard every single day. And she's worked so hard to build this program. And Lauren Don, our assistant, has been right there through her for it all. And but just the team of them has been such a great impact on my life and all the other girls on the team. I know that they're just an awesome 1-2 punch, and just day in and day out pouring into us, they just do a great job.
Caroline Powers, the lowest career average of any women's golfer at MSU, Big Ten Golfer of the Year, just qualified for the U.S. Open, turning pro, All-American. I mean, I could go on and on and on. I got to ask you, Caroline, who is your favorite golfer?
My favorite golfer, I mean, right now I'd have to say Stacey Lewis, just because, you know, she played in college, and I think she's just such an awesome success story and a great role model for golfers of all ages. So right now I'd probably have to say her, but from when I was little, my cousin Emily Bostel, she played at Michigan State, so she's always the one who I really looked up to and I wanted to be like, and she played on tour, so she's probably my forever golfer that I look up to, but the current one would probably be Stacey Lewis.
Nice, nice. Now, Caroline, you have just recently become a recipient of the Dinah Shore Award, which goes to a female collegiate golfer who excels in both academics. Now, you got to at least have a 3.2 on a 4.0 scale. I know a lot of guys who don't have that. Oh, my goodness. And athletics. I mean, you have to play in at least 50% of the team's scheduled events while maintaining a 78 or less scoring average. Now, the nominees must also demonstrate outstanding leadership skills and community service. How in the world were you able to maintain dominance on the course and also in the classroom, Caroline?
I mean, it definitely takes a lot of time management, but I just stick to, you know, you make time for what you want to. So I always knew that school was important to me, not for any reason other than the fact that I knew if I did well that I should be achieving those higher grades. And so it's the same competitiveness that I have on the golf course. You know, I'm in the classroom, you're competing against your best self also. Really just, you know, every day making time for the important things first. And then, you know, if you have time to watch your favorite TV show at the end of the day, then that's great.
What are some of your favorite TV shows? I got to ask you that, too.
Oh, Dancing with the Stars is definitely at the top of my list.
Nice. Now, you majored in elementary education, Caroline. Where did you get the passion from to teach and go into that field? And what do you hope to do with that degree?
Well, right now I don't plan on doing much at all with it, you know.
Right,
gotta live out the golf dream first. but I just had such great elementary school teachers all growing up, and it probably started in third grade, really, and fourth is when I was just like, wow, like, my teachers are so cool and they are awesome, and they just make school so much fun. So ever since then is when, you know, I started to develop a passion for teaching, and I just, you know, I was convinced that I can make kids love every subject instead of, you know, just gym class or art or recess.
Right.
So I had the greatest time these past 4 years working in classrooms around Lansing area. And even if I never use it, you know, I had a great time studying it and working with everyone that I did. So who knows if I'll end up becoming a teacher, but I'm still definitely glad that I did it.
Caroline Powers. Truly something special to see you play on the golf course. The lowest career average of any woman's golfer at MSU, Big Ten Golfer of the Year, turning pro very soon. So how about this year's team, Caroline? You guys recently finished ninth at the NCAA championships, the best finish in school history. What made this year's team special?
I mean, we were just so deep all year, and I think we had a lot of ups and downs, you know, on and off the court, but I think it just made us tougher all the way around, and just the fact that, you know, it was so competitive to be in the lineup every tournament that it just drove everyone all that much more in practice to work harder and, you know, figure out how to make birdies and how to eliminate our big mistakes that are costing us the strokes, because once you get to, you know, Big Tens, regionals, and nationals, we don't have time for the doubles and those kinds of scores. So I think it was just every tournament led up to this. And, you know, at the end of the year, Christine was playing awesome, and Alyssa was really firing in there. So I think it was just, it was absolutely a team effort. And, you know, counting different scores every day and dropping a different fifth, I think it just showed the depth of our team and that, you know, any given round, any one of us can shoot under par. So that definitely helped.
Truly a special season for you guys. Now, Caroline, you make it look so easy on the golf course. Let's go the opposite right on this. What was your biggest challenge when it came to getting good at the game of golf when you first started playing?
When I first, probably just getting out of my own way. I remember my dad telling me that from a very early age. You know, he said, Caroline, you're the only one that can hold yourself back here. So I think that really hit home in the fact that just kind of raising the glass ceiling on yourself. You know, when I was really little, my sister and I used to play five golf. So, you know, if we made a five on every hole, we were going to shoot a 45. And that was good right. for a while, you know, that was our goal. But then we're shooting, you know, we pretend we're shooting four under and we're like, yeah, I got a 41. And my dad's like, girls, you can't do that anymore. Like, you got to you gotta set your bar higher for yourself. You're only ever going to, you know, be four under five golf. You should want to be four under, you know, real par. So I think that really helped to just not put a glass ceiling on yourself ever. And, you know, don't expect just to shoot par every round. Like, you know, expect yourself to shoot a 68 every time and just really raising your own expectations.
Right. Now, that's a great point, Caroline. You talk about setting those expectations with baby steps, little by little, and constantly getting better. For you, going into the pro level now, what are some of your goals and expectations in regards to those baby steps? What do you hope to do on the pro level?
Well, currently I'm working on my sand shots, trying to get those a little bit tighter so I can get them up and down, and then just really honing in on my wedges. You know, you can ask any pro out there, they're going to tell you 120 yards in is where the good things and the bad things are going to happen. So everyone can strike it well. It's just a matter of, you know, who's sticking it tight on the par fives and when you have a wedge in your hand. So that's what I'm trying to focus on now. And just, you know, every time I have a wedge in my hand, I want to have a, you know, a short birdie putt to fire away at. And so that's what we're just trying to get everything together now and see where it puts me.
Well, we wish you much success from all of us here at Current Sports as you move on. There you have, ladies and gents, Caroline Powers, arguably the greatest women's golfer in the history of Michigan State University, the lowest career average of any women's golfer in MSU. She is this year's Big Ten Golfer of the Year, has just qualified for the U.S. Open, All-American, the recipient of the Dinah Shore Trophy. She'll be turning pro at the end of June. Caroline, thanks so much for coming on Current Sports. I wish you the best on turning pro.
Thank you so much for having me.
No problem. Take care.
All right, have a good one.
All right. Well, before we leave, we have to give a special thanks to everyone that contributed to today's episode of Current Sports. Alex Sharg and Matt Lucky, our production assistants, my intern, Mike Corey, along with my engineer, Aaron Young, Peter Worf, our station manager here at WKAR. Thanks for Bob Every for doing that incredible piece. We'll have part two tomorrow. Caroline Powers for coming on the show. One of the MSU's greatest golfers. Unbelievable. She's such a sweetheart. Thanks for tuning in, folks. Have a fantastic day. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FM HD3 East Lansing. Have a good one, folks.